Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. And it is now or never. That debt is fraud. Please make your appeal to heaven. And your campaign began after that election. If a tyrant got elected, whomever, if they're not going to support the Constitution, if they're not going to fulfill their oath of office, you need to start your PR campaign against them immediately. Start preparing petitions. Start organizing so you have a body people to actually start standing up against these tyrants, especially your local ones. You do not have to create a state network. We have a representative government, and that's why your county has representatives to represent you and protect you from government above. This is why we've gone through those documents, what I call the five critical documents of the Kentucky and Virginia resolutions and the details that Madison provides regarding those actions of holding government accountable to the Constitution, keeping them within the framework. Welcome back, Tammy. And so I'll bet you, I'm going to take a guess that you might be muted, but I know she's here, folks. She's here.
I'm here.
All right. So we were just talking when we were ending about how Walmart has to actually register in each state and they have to abide by the rules and the laws of the state, where the federal government can't, you know, create advantages for Walmart so that they can actually, you know, operate under the standards of what the state wants to inflict upon them. And what that means, folks, is that so Walmart is a predatory corporation. They're coming in to undersell and actually get rid of your ability to have your own community centers of, you know, hardware, groceries, and those types of things. Walmart basically says we can do it better. Okay, you can do it better, but at the cost of what? At the cost of us becoming dependent upon you. Folks, when you get rid of your ability to bring food in, hardware, and the essential services and goods that you need, and Walmart becomes your own sole source, then they can actually show, well, we have a shortage of that in this area. Sorry about that. In other words, they're not there to serve you like those local businesses. So states could actually create protections against predatory businesses. And they need to. They need to make it so that Walmart can't come in and destroy, you know, your economy. I know there's lots of people that just love Walmart because of the deals. But look at how we've become solely dependent on the globalists for every crumb and every nail that we get. You're far better off. This has shifted our economy overseas, because when we looked at the old mechanisms of, you know, providing and so forth, it was a labyrinth of channels of distribution. There were importers and exporters all over the place and distributors and these people that helped, you know, pull in these different products for your hardware store, your local hardware store. Well, Walmart does all of that, and they wiped out not just that local business, they wiped out those local distributors as well. They do far more damage to your state. So the state should actually have a huge cost so that Walmart can't undercut you. They may be able to fix their prices, but the taxes that should be levied on them should be of such that they can't destroy your local economy. Does that make sense?
Absolutely, yes.
Okay. So that way, because the federal government has no ability to dictate, you know, how a state treats the corporations that they form, or I should say they allow to form under them. The states are not corporations. The states are governing sovereigns that are created by the people. when the federal government went down the path, we'll get into the Organic Act down the road here very soon. It's in the queue, folks. But there's, you know, to kind of help set expectations regarding the Organic Act. The Organic Act was basically the beginning of moving government behind doors and acting and functioning in ways that had no authority to do. That's all. But you won't find a real smoking gun where, you know, the king has been, or Satan has been anointed to rule us. Anything like that. Anyway, you also brought up a problem regarding property taxes. And I've kind of mentioned this before, that states need to be, or I should say counties need to be self-sustaining. When we create a government, when a state is created in the United States into the Union, it needs to self-sustain itself. And so any government that's instituted by the people, and counties should be instituted by the people, then those counties should be self-sustaining, right? And so you brought up a point in Wyoming, and I believe this is a point everywhere. So go ahead.
Well, property taxes, in my personal opinion, it's legal plunder because we're taxing on unrealized capital gains. Yet when we talk about getting rid of property taxes or reducing property taxes, there's a lot of screaming, because especially for counties like Washakie County or Weston County, they say they're hardship counties, that they won't have the money they need to pay for services.
Okay, but when we look at those services, why are they creating services they can't pay for? Where are these services coming from? Are these services that are being mandated by the state? Give us some example.
That's a good question. That's the thing that I keep asking. Like, what services are we going to lose? I keep asking that question and nobody can give me an answer.
Okay. So I believe when you really start, because you have to look at the county outlays, right? So this is what you got to do. You got to look at what is, because folks, this is a discovery everywhere. But I can tell you that when the federal government created the interfaces for the Department of Labor, for the Department of Housing, the Department of the Health and Human Services, the Environmental Protection Agency, on and on and on. When they inflicted these regulations down to the states, that was done unconstitutionally. This is why you'll actually see at the state level a Department of Transportation that actually interfaces with the federal Department of Transportation. Same thing with the Environmental Protection Agency. Same thing with your labor and labor laws in the state. They're basically being driven, and they're an interface for the federal government to regulate you, all unconstitutionally. Again, so this is a spending of money that's fraud being committed upon the state and the state budget, because the federal government is already spending money that they don't even have. I mean, so if you look, we're being double defrauded at the federal level as well as your state, because your state is spending money on services that is being required by the federal government that they're taxing you on, and the federal government's taxing you on those same things to be able to create these bureaucracies to govern. So when you hear me say that we're supposed to have a Republican form of government, but we have a judiciary form of government, because the judiciary is the ones that are actually telling us how to live our lives. When we look at the corporate form of government, they're the ones that are, you know, actually forcing these laws to protect them. You know, when you have a tire law in your state that, you know, you can only buy these tires, or if your tire is worn to a certain point, you can't drive on that, because the shop requires you to buy a new tire. Those types of laws are predatory laws that corporations have created. In other words, this is how your state legislature, who has no constitutional authority to create a law regarding your car, that's not in your constitution, they have no ability to regulate your car. The way they're doing this is through the federal laws, and corporations are basically riding on the backs. So with the executive, judiciary, and these corporate governances, we now have a trifecta of an executive, a judiciary and a corporate forms of government. We also have a political form of government. I'm just telling you that your representatives are not doing your bidding based on the Constitution you gave them. And they have no idea the power that we have in this system. The power resides with the people. We never surrendered our power to the global governance bodies and to everybody that is basically taking the marrow out of our backbone. So you got to look at your county's outlays, determine where that money is being spent. And then from that point, you should be able to start garnering, you know, okay, so they're spending money on health and human services, like emergency vehicle services. You know, somebody has a 911 call. Well, because I know how rural you are. If you have ambulatory services, who pays for that? Because I'm going to tell you that you live in an area where if people had to pay the cost of an ambulance ride, then they would say, no way, no how, we'll get our butts there on our own, or I'm going to die. And you know what? People, folks die. Folks die because they went camping or they went hiking up into the mountains, and we don't have a right to ambulatory care up at the top of that mountain. So a helicopter can come take you out. You want those types of services, you've got to delegate that to the state. But they've created all of these things, and it's really nice to have. But the reality is, in the old days, there were risks to living. And if you lived in an area where you couldn't have access to those services, you understood that. And you lived under the umbrella, or I should say you lived in an open environment where you had no umbrella of protection. People that live on the coastline where hurricanes will slam you, you live at the risk of doing that. The fact that we, the people, bail your butts out all the time, or you live in Tornado Alley and you live in the condition, or you have standards that allow you to build stick homes in Tornado Alley, you know, my heart bleeds for everybody's pain. But we can't have government bailing everybody out for not dealing with the... It's about common sense, logic, and reason. You live on that coastline, you better build a house that's going to protect you so that you don't lose your investment. If you can't do that, then by the graces of God, you should enjoy an unstormed life if you can live there without those types of problems. Or you have to rebuild when you get hit by a storm. That's just what it is. That's the risk that you've got to take. Everybody has to take risks. If you have to take those risks, you're living with those risks. And my heart goes out for everybody that suffers by these natural calamities. But one of the things I will tell you that we've started learning and discovering, that governments have been manipulating and making these calamities worse.
Mm-hmm.
When we look at Katrina, how much was the government involved in making Katrina worse?
Yeah.
The conditions of these storms are being mind-boggling worse. And government is, so now we've got government killing us and using those things. Well, if they can bail us out, they can kill us by them too. We do not want government doing these things. We got to go back to the natural risks of life. We can't allow, because it's proven. Benjamin Franklin was the one that said it. As soon as government can give you everything, they can take everything from you as well. With the one hand that they can deliver, you know, and give, they can take with the other. And that's what they're doing. And this is never the design. This was never accepted in America. They've assumed these powers. So back to the counties of the states, if you live in a county that when you actually break down and get rid of the unconstitutional, the unlawful spending done by your county, does your county provide the services, and can they afford the sheriff and the ability to enforce the law? And as a matter of fact, when we look at law enforcement in every county under the Constitution, we the people are part of that. You need to be a part of your militia and working with your sheriff. the fact that the Dick Act took that away and made us believe that we no longer had this responsibility, that we would be under the privileges of living in a society that is governed and managed by mercenary forces. Where people pay for that stuff, and you have no say. And that can be inflicted. No, we are supposed to be governing. We're supposed to be executing. We're supposed to be enforcing our laws. That was the concept of this self-governing system. So, folks, wake up. You know, you can't live in the powder puff room of utopia and expect government not to be able to tap things, you know, fill you up with chemicals and tap every resource in your life to take from you. You can't have your bread buttered on all six edges. You know, people think of the two sides. There are four other sides that government will point out, and they will say, okay, well, we're going to hold you on those too. They will extract their pound of flesh because government has that type of force and power. They're the ones that fight the wars, and we've empowered them to kill and decimate our enemy. And with that same energy of force, they can turn it upon us, which is why I constantly beg and plead people to stop asking government, the federal government, to be involved in your school. They can bring those guns, or even worse, ideologies that will destroy us. They're your schools. That's your hospital. You don't have a hospital and you live in an area that can't afford one? Well, there's some risks to that. Just be happy you live in a place where you don't see a lot of people. Just hope and pray that you have a healthy life. And if not, and you can't live there, then see, Tammy, you understand the Agenda 2030 program, the 20-minute cities and all of that, right?
Yes.
And so the concept is, and this is a kind of a beautiful concept, when you think about the utopia that they're talking about, is you can have all the services within 20 minutes of you. But they can't do a 20-minute city out in the middle of Wyoming, right?
Yeah.
So they have to get you out of Wyoming. They have to get you out of being a rancher. They have to get you out of being a farmer. That will have corporate or government ranches. We'll have corporate or government, you know, and today, folks, the corporate ranches are cockroach warehouses.
Yeah, true.
Right? I mean, let's put context to this. This is how evil it's becoming. Their ranches, instead of having cattle, instead of having sheep and chickens and those types of things, they want to get rid of them and just have this warehouse, this huge facility of crickets and cockroaches and ants and all different forms of insects to feed you.
Yeah.
I don't know if you ever saw Soylent Green. Some of the listeners probably, oh, wow, Soylent Green. Okay, I remember that. And, you know, that concept was that we were so deprived of any food sources that we were feeding ourselves. In other words, the dead bodies that were, you know, piling up, they turned them into food, and that's how we sustained ourselves, with Soylent Green. And today, you know, the idea of Soylent Green is, you know, is actually becoming a fleeting idea because they've come up with even something worse. They're going to feed us insects and create new risks to our lives and our communities and so forth. What would happen if all of a sudden this huge warehouse filled with these parasites and insects all of a sudden broke loose? I mean, boom. Could you imagine what would happen to, you know, the city of, you know, Orange County? That warehouse would, you know, it could just infect everybody and affect everybody. And no longer would it be supposedly sanitary conditions. It would basically create plagues. Biblical proportion plagues. Cockroaches and actually crickets and or grasshoppers that can actually fly and bring the disease to you. Anyway, we've digressed. But
like they're planned, they're mosquitoes.
Yes, whatever.
They're planning to inject us with mosquitoes.
Yes, right. Inoculate us by mosquitoes.
Yes.
Yeah, right. Okay, so the fact is, when you look at your government, what you have to do is you've got to go through its expenditures and go, why is the cost of our government so high? And then you'll actually identify all of the costs It's just a financial audit. Where's all the money going? And okay, you look at all those things, you go, wow, these things are not within the Constitution. So we should actually, and we can pay for ourselves. But see, what has happened?
Yeah, not just what the money is being spent on, is the money is it constitutional? Can they even do it?
Right. Okay, so that brings up the point. There's an old adage, he who pays the piper calls the tune. So guess what? If you're a welfare county, then you're living by the graces of those paying your benefits. In other words, those people could say, you know what? Cut them off. And now there's nothing you can do, because all of a sudden they're calling the tune. And instead of actually putting you into conservatorship and letting you rebuild yourself all over, no, they're going to foreclose. They're going to come after you. These are very dark days where government has created these colors of law, or the color of law, to basically seize your property, your rights, everything. And the reality is, you have the right to challenge government in doing these things because they have no authority. There are no general powers. Folks, again, the Constitution is our defense. It is our weapon. If they're doing things that are not within the Constitution, they can't do it. They don't have any authority. We have all of the authority to stop them. Anyhow.
So when you go and tell people, hey, that's not enumerated power, we shouldn't be paying for that, then they come back and say, oh, you just don't have a heart. You don't want to help people, because that's something that's helping people.
So
kind of like that 988, you know, they passed the bill to pay for a 988 number for suicide.
Okay.
Help.
Right. And so in doing that, the bottom line is, can they create a law to do that?
No.
So what constrains your legislature in creating laws?
The state constitution and the federal constitution.
Okay, so the state constitution has to delegate them the ability to provide those types of services. Right? If those services aren't within the state constitution, then they can't create the law. Even if the federal government comes down and says, you've got to create that, then the challenge for the legislature is to turn around and say, where in the Constitution do you have the authority to inflict that law upon us? The wackos are running the institution. Does that make sense? In other words, these crazy people have escaped this insane asylum, and they're running everything. They're not just running the insane asylum. They're running everything. It's that crazy and it's that bad. Understanding these documents. So we need to get back into the Tory Acts. And so I think that we finally reached a point where we kind of understand common law and why county committees for working with your county commissioners is so essential. Because it gives the county the ability and empowering the voice of the people to declare, under the representation of those people at a greater number, to declare justice or what needs to be done under our system, under our common law system, as well as our constitutional system. There should be a jealousy between the common law justice system and the constitutional justice system. That jealousy should be stronger in the common law side, or on the we the people side, to not allow those constitutional courts to reach into those things that are sacred for us, our marriage, our everyday lives. We created you to do these things. Stay within your will well. Stay within those things we've delegated. You don't have the ability to get beyond that. And then when they do get beyond that and we don't stop them, whose fault is it?
Ours.
There you go. It's ours. It's your fault, folks. It's your fault that we're in this mess. And so that's why we need you to start demanding and getting involved in these committees at the county level. You need to start petitioning and driving petitions and holding them accountable to the fullness of the law. And we're trying to create more petitions. The more you get involved, the more we can do, because we can help teach you to write petitions and we can share your petitions. It's about a symbiosis between all of us. We'll be right back.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so let's get back to the Tory Acts, where we kind of left off, and I need to pull them up myself, and I'm sure Tammy's got to pull them up for herself as well. We kind of left off.
I'm ready.
With the last part of the June 2nd, 1776. And it's what I'll do is just to kind of get everybody's head back in the game. This is the final resolve of that. And it says this: resolved that the assemblies, conventions, or committees. You remember, this is Continental Congress. So they're speaking for everybody of the colonies in this confederation. They're speaking for all these people that have basically took a stand against Britain and its tyranny. Resolved that the assemblies, conventions, or committees of councils of safety be requested forthwith to transmit to this Congress copies of all the petitions, memorials, and remonstrances which have been by their respective colonies presented to the throne or either house of parliament since the year 1762. How long? I mean, we're talking 14 years. They want to go back 14 years. Give us everything that you've done in standing up against this tyranny. And that they also informed this Congress, the Continental Congress, whether any and what answers were given to them. In other words, did you receive any answers at all from Parliament or the King? Now, when we get into the Declaration, it's 6 months from now, in July, you're going to realize that the Declaration of Independence basically says, we've petitioned and petitioned and petitioned you, and you failed to redress our grievances. In other words, silence. And, you know, there's an old adage, no is an answer in itself. No answer, I should say. No answer is an answer in itself.
Yes.
Okay. So anyway, the next message out of the Tory Acts, the next act out of Continental Congress, comes March 14th, 1776. So go ahead and read that.
Resolved that it be recommended to the several assemblies, conventions, and councils or committees of safety of the United Colonies immediately to cause all persons to be disarmed within their respective colonies who are notoriously disaffected to the cause of America, or who have not associated and shall refuse to associate to defend by arms these United Colonies against the hostile attempts of the British fleets and armies, and to apply the arms taken from such person in each respective colony in the first place to the arming the continental troops raised in said colony.
Okay, so
keep going or stop there?
No, let's stop right there. So does that make sense what they were talking about? Because this was, they hadn't even declared war yet, but they basically sent this out March 14th. The Declaration of Independence, I don't even think the Continental Congress actually went down that line, but at that point in time, I think that they were basically telling people that they needed to take action. It was a little premature, but still they were telling these committees that they needed to actually go and start confiscating these arms. Now, I believe, and I have no idea, I've got to look it up, when they actually declared that they were going to declare independence. They didn't formally do it, but I believe prior to March, Continental Congress had already said that we need to create this committee, and they were forming this committee to actually go and do this. So I believe at this point in time, John Adams, Thomas Jefferson, and Benjamin Franklin were put, basically called or appointed to this committee to create the Declaration of Independence. And so they went off to do this. Now, I have no idea whether Thomas Jefferson just whipped that thing out or what, but we do see that this is like 4 months before the Declaration, that this was going out to actually, you know, kind of prepare. Why did they want to wait, or why did they want to, you know, start confiscating at that point in time before the Declaration? Any ideas? Any?
I mean, no, I'm just trying to imagine what it would look like when they did that.
Well, so it's my, I surmise, my guess is that they wanted to get as much weaponry and goods out of the hands of these people who they couldn't trust, and get them into the hands of those who were going to have to defend the colonies. You want, in other words, it would have been foolish to wait till you declare independence and then all of a sudden everybody realized war's coming. You know, we better start hiding our goods. In other words, they wanted to have the upper hand. I think that this was an attempt and a good play at putting out there, because, again, the concept of independence had to have already been determined when they sent this out. Now, I go back to the October, because if everybody remembers, we kind of covered this on January 2nd. In October, they basically said that they wanted to arrest and secure every person in the respective colonies. Then they changed their tune and said, no, what we want to do is we want to make an appeal to them to join our causes, because everybody was really concerned that, you know, hey, this is like almost declaring war. This is almost like declaring independence type of thing. Yeah. And so they went back and they said, no, we want to do this. And that's what we just covered. Just a matter of 3 months or a couple of months later, they actually come back with this same call that they need to basically start taking and confiscating. Not talking about arresting, but at least going in and confiscating these arms. And then in June 1776, this was the next follow-up. Go ahead.
In the next, to the arming such troops as are raised by the colony for its own defense, and the residue to be applied to the arming the associators, that the arms when taken be appraised by indifferent persons, and such as are applied to the arming the continental troops be paid for by Congress, and the residue by their respective assemblies, conventions, or councils, or committees of safety.
Okay. So then they're kind of laying it out that they're moving forward in a much, you know, the determination is there that they want to make sure that they, you know, get these things, and that they basically are positioned to ensure the liberty be preserved. So the final Tory Act is next, I believe, right? I think this is the final Tory Act. Yep. No. You just read June. No, actually, no, you did March. That was the follow-on. Mm-hmm. So you just did June 18th. So now June 24th.
We haven't done June 18th yet.
Okay.
We just finished up March 14th.
Okay. Go ahead.
Resolved that no man in these colonies charged with being a Tory or unfriendly to the cause of American liberty be injured in his person or property, or in any manner whatever disturbed, unless the proceeding against him be founded on an order of this Congress or the Assembly Convention, Council or Committee of Safety of the Colony or Committee of Inspection and Observation of the District wherein he resides, provided that this resolution shall not prevent the apprehending any person found in the commission of some act destructive of American liberty or justly suspected of a design to commit such act and intending to escape and bringing such person before proper authority for examination and trial.
Okay, so in other words, they're moving further forward in positioning themselves to take action against the Tories, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so now, right before the declaration, so in other words, I believe when we're looking at June 24th, I believe that the declaration is being smoothed out politically. In other words, Thomas Jefferson from the committee has brought it out, and all of the delegates in Continental Congress are kind of reviewing to determine, because they want to make sure that this declaration speaks of what they want and so forth. And so July 4th, or actually July 2nd, I always read Thomas Jefferson's original draft. It is not the same as the Declaration of Independence. In other words, the Southern states wanted political correctness. They wanted to make sure that they removed these things about disparaging comments towards slavery. They wanted to make sure that they didn't look like the bad guys in the Union, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. And so political correctness was literally being applied heavily in that original Declaration of Independence, or I should say upon that. And I believe while they were trying to hammer out that, this went out to all of the colonies prior to the declaration. So go ahead.
Resolved that all persons abiding within any of the United Colonies and deriving protection from the laws of the same owe allegiance to the said laws and are members of such colony. And that all persons passing through, visiting, or make a temporary stay in any of the said colonies, being entitled to the protection of the laws during the time of such passage, visitation, or temporary stay, owe, during the same time, allegiance thereto. That all persons, members of, or owing allegiance to any of the United Colonies as before described, who shall levy war against any of the said colonies within the same, or be adherent to the King of Great Britain, or others the enemies of the said colonies, or any of them within the same, giving to him or them aid and comfort, are guilty of treason against such colonies.
Okay. Keep going.
That it be recommended to the legislatures of the several United Colonies to pass laws for punishing in such manner as to them shall seem fit such persons before described as shall be provably obtained of open deed by people of their condition of any of the treasons before described.
Okay, so they basically laid it out that these people would be considered treasonous, they would be considered unwelcome, and that they, you know, gave at that point in time, because we had gone to war, they were going to actually get rid of these people. So what ended up happening was a couple of weeks later, we were in the throes of war. George Washington, if I remember correctly, was already in Boston and fighting with the Continental Army, or I should say with the militia of Massachusetts and a couple of other northeastern states or colonies. And so they were in the throes of that, which is when we've ultimately said we're going down to war. And that anybody in these states that is not supporting the cause of liberty will be revoked of their citizenship and they will lose everything. Now, technically, under the charge of treason, they were to be hanged. And I believe that the language was of such of rhetoric that, you know, Because we don't have any other discussions regarding the Tory Acts during the Revolutionary War until the very end. And actually, I don't have that, folks, because the final declaration by Continental Congress was, and what they ended up doing was they ended up seizing the Tories, those who were the loyalists. Now, this was to the tune of about 100,000 out of the few million people that lived in the colonies, almost, let's just say, 5%, maybe 3%, 4% of the people living in the colonies were cast out. They lost their property. They lost everything. The only thing they carried with them was the shirts on their back, their coat, whatever.
Yeah, as I read the March 14th, when they were talking about disarming them, my question in my mind was, with what authority are they doing that? But then they established that authority at the end.
Yes, because they were moving forward of creating a union, because under at this point in time, the Articles of Confederation had not been formed. They had to first declare independence, and then it was the following year, in 1877, that the Articles of Confederation were formed. So now they had created, the states had actually, okay, so getting a little ahead of myself. The Continental Congress created the Articles of Confederation, and it took how long to ratify them? Well, okay, so it's a trick question. I cover this all the time, but bottom line, when you look at the Articles of Confederation and in comparison to the Constitution was ratified within a year, within less than a year. The beautiful, I say this sarcastically because there's all sorts of people out there that just admire the Articles of Confederation. Because the Articles of Confederation were so perfect that these people are telling you that we got to go back to those. They were so perfect that it took the states, what, 5-6 years to ratify. 1877 to 1883, right? That's 6 years it took them to ratify, to put into force that all states became a part of the Union. And so my point is this, folks, is that we were already at the end of the war. And most people said, the Continental Congress kind of served its purpose. And that's one of the reasons why everybody just ignored it. It had no force. It was a joke. And the Continental Congress was saying, hey, we need some amendments. We need to be able to buy pencils. We need to be able to pay our debt and so forth and so on. And it started causing problems. The state of Massachusetts, as they started actually trying to legitimately pay their debt, because they were Puritans, they were good people at that point in time. Nowadays, they're not so good, at least not the majority of Massachusetts has gone south. And so when we look at Massachusetts and the Shay Rebellion, that was one of the final signals that we actually had to have a constitutional convention that convinced George Washington to legitimize or become a part of that convention. So people give way too much credit to that work of governing the Articles of Confederation that was done in haste. And they give way too much credit to that. And they look at the Constitution as the problem when the Constitution is not the problem. We've spent years here proving this, folks, that the Constitution was truly a design that was created and granted to us by the divine hand of providence. That we have everything we need in that Constitution to deal with all of the tyranny, all of the colors of law, all of these unconstitutional powers that have been assumed and laws and regulations that they've basically concocted in this cauldron in D.C. and throughout the states, this evil that they've put upon us. We have the ability in that Constitution to clean this all up. And everybody that wants you to run and chase down, and I usually, this time of year, I spend a lot of time going through why a constitutional convention is ludicrous, because the Constitution is not the problem. I spend a lot of time on that. We don't have time to do that this year. We'll probably cover it very briefly, but I usually spend like a week on it. But I'm not going to do that because we need to actually cover a lot of content, and we need to get into the details of these documents instead of worrying about, you know, these little side arguments regarding, you know, the merits of a balanced budget amendment and those types of things. The only reason we would need to have a constitutional convention is when the states literally want a very specific amendment, because the Constitution is inept or it does not provide this one thing. That is not the case at all. Not at all. That's why the Convention of States can't even tell you that the Constitution itself is the problem. They try to tell you that the Commerce Clause is problematic because of the way it's defined. And I'm here to tell you that the language is clear. The Congress shall have the power to regulate commerce amongst the foreign nations and among the states. Not within the states. They have no power in that Constitution to regulate commerce within the states. It says among, not within. And the language was very clear. I mean, you don't need to define it. That's one of the reasons why in the ratification debates, they was very clear that the commerce was completely maintained and managed and regulated by the states. So, anyway, we need to kind of put everything on, you know, on the fast burner, because one of the things we're going to do, and Tammy, one of the things you get to do, because I don't know if you've listened or you've heard, we're going to move the ratification debates up. Instead of doing it in the summertime, we're kind of going to cover the ratification debates probably in February instead of starting in March or April or May. We want to, you know, kind of get through the evolution, because the next few things we're going to cover. Go ahead.
Yeah, good.
So what the next few things we're going to cover, because we now covered the Tory Acts, but we haven't covered, and the reason we covered the Tory Acts on January 2nd was because of the significance of January 2nd. That was the big Tory Act. It was the longest and the most substantial act out of all the Tory Acts. There was a multiple of them. And so I said, you know, that's a great way to start the year off, to really start setting the tone and helping everybody understand what happened, how the people used their rights to stand up against government. That's what we have to do today. We got to follow that suit. We got these rights of assembly. We have the rights to petition our government. We have the rights to demand that these milquetoast commissioners or supervisors that are serving you at the county need to start actually supporting their constitution. And we're not asking them to take hours and weeks and months to, you know, to fight something. All they've got to do is create the committee and empower you. All they need to do is then take what you've given them and endorse it. If they have challenges, there's no doubt we will be able to prove to them the veracity of every argument and every case we give them, so that all they have to do is basically take the declaration of we the people, of this common law jury, of committee, assembly, whatever, but it is just like a jury where we declare that the only legitimate constitution is the U.S. original language of the Constitution, not that annotated quagmire that the federal courts and the federal government's been maintaining. That is not our Constitution, nor is it legitimate for the federal government to use it. Bottom line, so we're going to do all of this. We can do these things, and as one county does it, it will be verified and validated, and eventually it'll basically be accepted in its form across the union, because it'll be perfected. Once you get through probably four or five counties looking at it, there'll probably be so minute of a change at all in any questions, because when you create the argument, the veracity of that argument cannot be broken, because that argument is based on the founding source documents. In other words, the only way somebody can prove that the annotated Constitution is a legitimate Constitution is that language has to be very specific, that the federal government has the ability to maintain and create an annotated Constitution and maintain their own definitions and how to enforce and those. That language has to be delegated to them. And it's not anywhere in the Constitution, nor was that language ever explicitly given in the ratification debates. And actually, we have all the evidence to prove that they don't have that power.
So why do we need to create a county committee? Why not just start giving the commissioners petitions?
So when you give the county petitioner, or you give your commissioners, your supervisors, the petition calls for them to create this county. Or this committee, I should say, this Constitution Compliance Committee, then because they first have to understand what Constitution they're dealing with. They don't even realize that the problems they're dealing with are coming underneath and via that annotated Constitution. So they actually have to get the people to acknowledge and agree and tell them that the only Constitution that is legitimate by all the source documents. I mean, anybody can academically create an argument that becomes, do you need, you know, a judge and a degree for the people to say, hey, that is the sun that is causing sunburn, that is, you're making our plants grow, not this thing at nighttime that we call this moon that has its cycles. In other words, you don't need a judge to say that that's the sun. That shines on us every day, that thing at nighttime is the moon. We already know these things. These are absolutes, and the concept of common law, where the people have the ability to establish the law. They have the ability to support the supreme law and determine whether that supreme law has been violated. That is empowered by we the people.
And so do the draft petitions that have already been formulated, do each one of those requests that they form a committee?
Yeah, so each petition, from petition 1 to petition 21 that we have on our website, actually it's 2 to 21, we've got to replace one, but from each of the petitions, the last part, the expectations, in other words, we point out the problem, the UN and all these laws, it's all unconstitutional. This is what you got to do. You got to create this committee. They all point to got to create that committee. So that's all they got to do is actually create the committee. And this is why in Stevens County, Washington, the resolution out of Stevens County, Washington was to create this Constitutional Compliance Committee. So they're going through the process of setting that up. Now, one of the things that has to be done is we got to create the bylaws. They need to have bylaws for it. They need to have, you know, certain things as they start forming this committee. This committee will be probably formed in the next few months. And so this will be the first committee in the United States where a common law committee has been called for by the county commission, the representatives of the people, to basically start moving the county body of supervisors or commissioners, this board of commissioners, to actually start doing very specific things, to start sanctioning very specific things. And they're not going to break away from the state of Washington. What they're going to do is they'll do the audit and they'll be sharing this. And this is why, folks, you need to read this petition, because this isn't creating a runaway government. This is actually getting our hands on the reins of our government, pulling back on them, and actually getting them to methodically take back our Constitution and our framework of government, and really, literally, restore our constitutional framework from the federal government down to the state, and then establish it at the county as well. We can talk a little bit more about it in our next episode on Tuesday, but anyway, hopefully this all helps. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract And with Republic Review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as Republic Review. Please read my argument for Republic Review, as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.